G'day, and welcome to another episode of Left After Breakfast, coming to you from Melbourne, Australia. My name is Susanna Duffy, and in this episode of Left After Breakfast, let's have a look at one of Ireland's most endearing traditions, and that's St. Patrick. Patrick must be the best known of all the patron saints. Think of all those parties and parades he has right across the globe. And St. Patrick's Day is always a happy occasion, a day of revelry, with people who are totally unconnected to Ireland enjoying themselves. There are many drinking toasts raised to the memory of Patrick. Stories are told. But most of the tales traditionally associated with Patrick are false. But then again, why let the truth spoil 1500 years of good storytelling? History has been kind to Patrick, very kind indeed. St. Patrick was a very early superhero. Let's face it, he gets a lot of publicity. In the old days, he had an excellent theatrical agent, and his slick promotional material, backed up by Roman gold, was of the very best quality. You know how it goes. Repeat something often enough and most of the population believe it. Just look at politicians, ancient or modern. Yes, history has been kind to Patrick, thanks to the full weight of the Church of Rome. Of course, Patrick's book helped too. It's an autobiographical confession written in about the year 450 of our common era. And what a wonderful record of 5th century British life it is, to be sure. Patrick has been many things to many people. To Christy Moore, he's a gentleman.
That's lovely.
Oh, Patrick was a gentleman and he came from decent people. He built a church in Dublin town and on it put a steeple. His father was a Gallagher, his mother was a Grady. His aunt was in the Shocknessy and his uncle was Paul Brady. The Wicklow hills are very high and so is the hill of Hoth, sir. There's a hill much higher still, much higher nor than both, sir. On the top of this high hill St. Patrick preached a sermon. Drove the frogs into the bogs and banished all the vermin. There's not a mile of Ayrton's Isle where dirty vermin musters. There he put his dear 4 foot and he murdered them in clusters. The toads went pop and the snakes went hop slap dash into the water. The frogs committed suicide to save themselves from slaughter. 1,000,000 reptiles blue we charmed with sweet discourses. Dined in them in Killaloo and soups and second courses. The small worms roaming in the grass disgusted all the nation. Down to hell with the holy spell he changed their situation. Was I but so fortunate as to be back in Munster, I'd be bound that from that ground I never more would wonster. There's St. Patrick planted turf, cabbages and pretties, pigs galore, my grandma's store, Stockton's winging ladies.
There's a good story about St. Patrick that I will happily shoot down out of the sky. It's the banishing of the vermin, ridding Ireland of the snakes. In fact, you could call St. Patrick's Day Snakes Day. I know that some people do and enjoy themselves on Snakes Day. But I'll just talk about St. Patrick. When he drove the snakes out of Ireland, he was banishing the ancient religion. After all, Patrick was an agent of the Church of Rome, an organisation not known for its tolerance of other faiths. And we see in this legend the systematic attempt to eradicate the old religion from Ireland. The ancient religion of Ireland had a very frightening aspect for the Church of Rome. It was based on a goddess. And curiously enough, her symbol was a serpent. So with the coming of this big Church of Rome, much of the essence of the goddess evolved into St. Bridget, a Christianized version of Bridget. Bridget, Bree, the great goddess, the fiery arrow. Bridget is still celebrated, of course, on February the 1st in Bollig, and it's a traditional fire festival on this astronomical cross-quarter day. It's the exact midpoint between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, and as such signifies the first stirrings of spring, focusing on increasing light, purification, and the awakening of nature. All aspects of the great goddess. Good for you, Bridget, who has now become St. Bridget. But she doesn't get anywhere near Patrick when it comes to worldwide adulation and fun. Well, you can't really drink a green beer to Bridget. You're better off with a glass of milk, or in my case, a tub of yogurt. But let's stick to St. Patrick. That's what I was on about. We can leave the subject of Irish mythology and the great goddess herself for another day.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Now, there's a story going around that Patrick invented the Celtic cross, that he made up from the top of his head, this idea, this symbol, the beautiful Celtic cross. No, he did not. Once again, I'll explain, the Christian religion was imposed very lightly on the Irish. And Patrick, being a smart cookie, knew the language and the culture, and he wove his lessons over the existing fabric of traditional ritual belief. That this was the Roman way of assimilation. And you can see very clearly, when you look at a Celtic cross, the powerful sun symbol placed onto the saviour symbol. You didn't make it up, boyo. And then there is the universal symbol of Ireland, of St. Patrick's Day, of green beer, if you wish, and that's the shamrock. Now, stories tell how Patrick used the shamrock as a symbol of the Trinity. The shamrock as a symbol of the Trinity. Look, let's be real. No one had the need to explain the concept of the Trinity to the Irish, whether with a shamrock or with anything else. If anyone understood the essence of three being one, of a trinity in unity, it was the early peoples of Ireland. The triple aspects of their great goddess were well understood, and indeed the shamrock was sacred to her, sacred to the great goddess Bridget. I'd say it's more likely that the Irish explained the concept of trinity to Patrick, using the shamrock to illustrate the concept.
3CR.
There is a wall in Mexico City with a memorial plaque for the Irish, for the members of the St. Patrick's Brigade, men who gave their lives for the Mexican struggle against the United States. This was between 1846 and 1848, at the height of the famine. The great hunger was ravaging Ireland, and hundreds of thousands of Irish people emigrated to the United States of America. They were in search of a better life. They were in search of opportunity and hope. Instead of hope, they found ridicule. Instead of opportunity, they found discrimination. They were Irish and unwanted. There were no jobs for the Irish. Their skin colour was all right, but their accents were not. Many enlisted in the US Army, where they were still second-class people. They were ridiculed and discriminated against, mainly for their accents and, of course, for their religion. And many were sent to the front lines to fight Mexico. USA declared war on Mexico in 1846. The then US President, James Polk, promised to expand US territory by any means necessary. So this was a war for land. But for the Irish, who were sent to the front lines, they identified not with Uncle Sam, but with the Mexicans defending their land against a foreign aggressor. It reminded them of their own fight back home to defend Catholic Ireland against the Protestant English. And like the Irish, the Mexicans were Catholics. In Mexico, the Irish watched homes burn, violence, looting, sexual assault. This is what they had seen at home in Ireland. So they defected. Hundreds left the red, white and blue and joined the Mexican army. And they were known as the St. Patrick's Brigade. As many as 800 men ultimately joined. They fought under Irish Captain John Riley. They marched under the green flag of St. Patrick with the harp and the shamrock. They fought in several major battles. The last one was Churubusco in Mexico City. Even as the US ranks gained the upper hand and the Irish ran out of bullets, the brigade pushed on. They tore down a white flag of surrender and battled with their bare hands. My word. The remaining Irishmen were taken and executed as traitors. But they are still remembered from Ireland to Mexico, and memorials still tell of their bravery. Stories are still told, and songs are still sung. In Mexico, they have their own day of remembrance, which is September the 12th, which honours the St. Patrick's Battalion. And of course, St. Patrick's Day. Across Mexico, people lift a glass to the brigade of Irish soldiers who fought to defend Mexican soil against the US invasion, and to those who gave their lives. In recent years, Mexico City has illuminated the city's Angel of Independence monument in green light to remember the St. Patrick's Brigade and their sacrifice. Yes, the story is still told and songs are still sung. This is David Rovix.
My name is John Riley. I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland. It was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. And there amidst all these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. March beat the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin-Goldra. Right with the harp and the shamrock, and Libertad para la República. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in Matamoros, where their volunteers were raping the nuns. In Monterrey and Cerro Gordo, we fought on as Ireland's sons. We were the red-headed fighters for freedom amidst these brown-skinned women and men. Side by side, we fought against tyranny, and I dare say we'd do it again. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside at the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.
These days, St. Patrick's Day is celebrated by people of all backgrounds across the world, Canada, Australia, the United States, and in other locations a long way from Ireland, like Japan, Singapore, and Russia. Around the world, St. Patrick's Day is recognised by Irish nationals, those who claim an Irish heritage, those who purport to be Irish, those who want to be Irish, and further still by many totally non-Irish. It has to be the most universal of all national days. And what will you do on St. Patrick's Day? Wear something green? Well, I will be. But I learnt that from my childhood to wear the green on St. Patrick's Day. No one bothered wearing it any other day of the year, just like now. One day seems to be enough and then forget about it. It's interesting, really, because my grandmother hated seeing me in green. She used to pull out my green ribbons. She always tried to conceal the fact that there was anything remotely Irish about us. She just wanted us to get on better in the world. And even then, in Australia, more than 70 years ago, being of Irish descent was lower class. But by all means, wear the green, even if it's only for one day. But when you do, just remember that in Irish history, this symbolises nationalism and rebellion against English rule. And it symbolises the cultural identity of the Irish. This colour green was originally associated with 17th century rebellions, and later on, the 1798 Society of United Irishmen wearing green was a defiant act of pride against English repression and often punishable by death. So wearing green, and particularly a shamrock, was once a colour to avoid before it became, as it is now, a festive colour for St. Patrick's Day. And don't forget, wearing green makes you invisible to leprechauns, who otherwise would pinch you. So avoid the pinching. Put on a green scarf.
Oh, Paddy dear, and did you hear the news that's going round? The shamrock is by law forbid to grow on Irish ground. St. Patrick's Day no more will keep, his colours can't be seen. For they're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green. I met with Napper Tandy and he took me by the hand. He said, how's dear old Ireland and how does she stand? She's the most distressful country that you've ever seen. For they're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. They're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green. Then since the colour we must wear is England's cruel red, sure Ireland's sons will ne'er forget the blood that they have shed. You may take the shamrock from your hat and cast it on the sod, but 'twill take root and flourish still though underfoot 'tis trod. My father loved his country and sleeps within its breast, while I that would have died for her must never so be blessed. Those tears my mother shed for me, how bitter they had been if I had proved a traitor to the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. They're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green. Lost our colour should be torn from Ireland's heart, her sons with shame and sorrow from the dear old isle would part. I've heard a whisper of a land that lies beyond the sea, where rich and poor stand equal in the light of freedom's day. Oh Ireland, must we leave you driven by a tyrant's hand, and seek a mother's blessing from a strange and distant land, where the cruel cross of England shall never more be seen. And in that land we'll live and die for wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. They're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. For the wearing of the green. They're hanging men and women for the wearing of the green.
So I will wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day, no matter what day of the year it is, and the memory of why we sing Irish songs in Australia.
Dusty plains and iron chains met Erin's sons and daughters, fast upon a barren land, a far off distant shore. They dreamed of misty mountains in their home across the water. They sang of Connemara and the home they see no more. Now limestone walls are all that's left of times of pain and failure. This country is the secret of the beauty that it holds. And the tunes of Erin's Isle are now the music of Australia. For Irish hands have woven strands of green among the gold. And so beneath the southern cross they sang their songs of Ireland, who sent her sons and daughters here in hungry days of old. They played their jigs and reels beneath the skies of their new homeland. For Irish hands have woven strands of green among the gold. Times were hard at home, and so we took a crazy notion to start a brand new life upon the far side of the globe. And now we find our hearts are stranded somewhere in mid-ocean. Though our days are full of sunshine and our futures full of hope, their children sing of droving life, of shearers and strangers. They learn to play our music and to dance the steps of old. Though the hearts are in Australia, they never will be strangers to the land they left behind them. They're the green among the gold. And so beneath the southern cross they sang their songs of Ireland, who sent her sons and daughters here in hungry days of old. They played their jigs and reels beneath the skies of their new homeland. For Irish hands have woven strands of green among the gold. And so beneath the southern cross we sing our songs of Ireland, who sent her sons and daughters here in hungry days of old. We play our jigs and reels beneath the skies of our new homeland. For Irish hands are weaving strands of green among the gold. For Irish hands are weaving strands of green among the gold.